Hi, it's Craig Wilson here, and welcome to the Making the Media podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us as we delve behind the scenes in the news, sports, and media entertainment industry. Now, if there's one subject you can almost be guaranteed that someone will have an opinion about, it's the weather. Too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry. Whatever the conditions are, it's a talking point for almost everyone. And climate change has also placed it at the top of the political agenda too. So in this episode, we're going to focus on the work of the United States-based Weather Group, the company behind the Weather Channel and other properties, and our guest is Nora Zimmet. She's the president of News and Original Series of an organisation which has saving lives as its overriding mission, a bit different from other newsrooms. Having previously worked at Bloomberg and Fox News, she joined the Weather Group from CNN, where she won the first of her two Emmys, the other one coming at the Weather Channel in 2019, when they won their first ever News and Documentary Emmy Award. She oversees live and original programming, including their much-heralded storm coverage and use of immersive graphics to change the way the weather is reported. The Weather Channel is, however, not about weather forecasting. It is about weather news. And so I began by asking Nora about that distinction.
You know, forecasting is a funny thing. It's certainly evolved over the last 50 years as an industry, right? It used to be just a man or woman in front of a green screen, maybe not even that, maybe even just a 2D map with some sun icons and rain icons and, you know, back to you, Joe, in the studio. With digital, it really evolved into a much more personalized capacity so that I can really see, at least get a sense of, maybe it's not 100% accurate all the time, but I can get a sense of what it's going to be in my neighborhood over the next few days. You know, on television, whether that be linear cable, linear local, or even OTT, you're catering to a national audience. And so you're really going, what we like to say is an inch wide and a mile deep, as opposed to digital, where you're going a mile wide and an inch deep. And what I mean by that is digital can customize in a much more granular way to millions and millions of people, but it's not going to be as analytically deep, maybe not as dense of storytelling. What we decided was, you know, at the Weather Channel, especially on linear television, there is a huge need for being able to explain the forecast and the science behind, and also storytell the survivors of major weather events, and not just in storms, but more and more as we're seeing climate change. So what we've done is blended a culture of meteorologists and journalists so that we're not just telling you it's going to be 75 and sunny tomorrow. We're explaining what's coming down the pipe and what you need to do with your family to prepare for it, as well as in major weather events, we're there to bear witness to see, you know, who's impacted, who needs help. Local, national officials and international organizations come to us to see where the greatest need is during and after a disaster. So that is our sweet spot. That's what we're doing more and more. Instead of just telling you sort of the ones and zeros of what it's going to be in various zip codes, we found there was a much greater need in the population to be able to explain, prepare, and also to protect and save lives when it comes to the most critical events.
Obviously, the technology that lies, you know, behind that capability of identifying where the stories are, identifying where the, you know, potential issues are, is also something that's changed massively over the sort of time period that you're talking about now. And the kind of data that's available now is vast. How difficult is it to then take that data and make that kind of explainable? I guess this is really about how the role of the presenter has evolved to tell those kind of stories.
Yeah, it's a great question, Craig. You know, when I started at the Weather Channel, it was very clear that weather presentation on camera really hadn't changed much since my mother was a girl watching television. And I think that's true for a lot of us and our parents, right? It was what we talked about earlier in the interview, which was a man or woman in front of a map, sort of pointing to areas on the map and explaining whether it was going to be rainy, sunny, snowy, hot or cold. With the advent of video gaming over the last 20 years, in a way that that goes far beyond just a 2D screen, but becomes a lot more immersive, certainly with multiplayer games and being able to have a first-person perspective inside a game. We asked ourselves back in 2014, 2015, how does that apply to us? What can we do to put people in the weather in a way that is more visceral, in a way that resonates better than just, you know, showing an icon on a 2D map? And that's where we started to develop augmented reality technology, as well as immersive mixed reality television. And by that, I mean really using a studio to put our scientists in it and create a weather system and environment around them. The technology wasn't even there. The software wasn't even there when we first started to do that, certainly in the United States. And so we had to go to Europe to find some experts. But then we started partnering with software specialists from video games. And it really became this interesting relationship by pushing and pushing and pushing the boundaries of what that software could do. So we were the first of our kind here in the US. And, you know, what I think is really most interesting and important to mention about how the weather uses augmented reality and immersive mixed reality is it's not a toy, it's a tool. We don't use it as window dressing. It's not a nice to have. There are a lot of other networks who use this kind of technology in a very pretty way, you know, and create maybe backgrounds in the studio or put some iconography and some, you know, 3D landmarks in a studio that make it eye-catching. But could you understand the story without it? Yes, you could. What we do at the Weather Channel is we use this technology in a way to tell a story that you really can't tell in a 2D world. And one of the first things that I think really caught the public eye in terms of using that tool was when we demonstrated what a storm surge looks like in a hurricane environment and really spelled out what different feet are, how different feet of surge can move cars, certainly sweep people off their feet and take off rooftops. So much so that we got the National Hurricane Center really excited about it. And they partnered with us in how can we as the National Hurricane Center better explain to people the dangers of water. And they've evolved a lot of their flooding maps you know, since that time. So again, we've had so many people come to us and say, until I saw that demonstration, I really didn't understand what it meant to have 4 feet of storm surge, 6 feet. What does it mean to, you know, flood a car? And when we can actually show it in front of people's eyes, in a studio in 3D, it has the impact of changing their behaviors and hopefully better understanding officials when they say it's time to leave, it's time to evacuate, because none of us want to evacuate our homes. But by showing people what the danger truly is through this immersive mixed reality, we have been told numerous times that we're the ones who came in and convinced people to leave when they needed to.
Where is that line that you talked a little bit about this earlier on between we've got this amazing kind of environment that we can create, but where is the line between that and then it being seen as a gimmick? I'm guessing that you have lots of ideas of how you might want to use it, but you have to be pretty careful about how you actually use it.
Right. That's a great point. I think we ask ourselves, is it necessary? Is it meteorologically relevant? And does it have the opportunity to protect and save lives? I keep using that phrase, but it's because the Weather Channel's mission is unapologetically to protect and save lives. And if our graphics don't, you know, follow those three rules, and by the way, it doesn't have to be literally like, is it going to save someone's life today, but is it going to educate them such that in if they are in that situation tomorrow, it could protect them? So again, that comes with the education component. Those are our guidelines, I would say. And we do everything from these cinematic IMRs to what we call virtual views. Virtual views are what we do live in studio. There's no post-production, where we're really forecasting in the studio using 3D graphics to show people what their forecast conditions are going to be like. It's not something as dramatic as, you know, a tornado in studios, but it is really impactful because it's something you can't get from an app. It's not something you can get from a robot. It's someone telling you, look, you know, these conditions are going to change from fog in the morning to rain and snow in the evening, and this is what you need to look out for. And so I would say those are sort of the more daily, smaller impact immersive experiences. And then there's the storm surge we discussed. There's tornadoes, there's hurricanes, wildfires. I mean, to be able to explain to people why a cigarette butt or just an ember from a campfire can cause a fire that sets, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres on fire. By doing that illustration in 3D, again, it went towards that, aha, I never really understood it before, and now I can see why that happens.
You talked about the team that you have as a mixture of journalists and also, you know, meteorologists and, you know, scientists that are there. You know, presenting in that kind of environment is also a different challenge as well. So how do you balance out that need to express the information with, you know, presentation is a little bit of acting. You know, it is about getting that kind of message across. So how's that kind of balanced out?
So we hire unicorns at the Weather Channel. I would say that the Venn diagram of qualities that we look for in both our meteorologists and our journalists is pretty vast, meaning the circles, there are so many circles that to find that sweet spot is pretty difficult. I would say when we're looking for meteorologists, we are, of course, first and foremost, looking for scientists who really understand the scientists and not just weather presentation. All of our meteorologists are degreed scientists. Most of them have multiple degrees. But also, do they know how to explain something to me? Do they know how to explain something to a non-scientist, to a civilian, in a way that is both accessible but also not patronizing, right? And that is harder than one might think to find. Once we do find that person, we have found that they really take to this presentation style very well. We do a ton of coaching. Our head of talent, Chris Samsuri, does not even let new talent like in the studio until they've gone through, in some cases, 2 months of training. And this is after they've been in Market 5 or after they're coming from a national broadcast network. So we are really, really rigorous in our training. We're really, really rigorous in our selection process. And when it comes to the partnership that you were asking about with the scientists and journalists, we have a rule of no brilliant jerks, right? We work in a team environment where it is absolutely critical that people are not only sharing ideas in a democratic way, but where they can disagree in a healthy way and, you know, the gloves don't come off. So we are looking for that trifecta of brains, on-camera skill, and also being a good team communicator. And that's true on the journalism side too. You know, not only do you know the news, can you write the news, can you assist, you know, with this story, but can you help someone who may not see it your way? With that combination, you know, we found a lot of success. You know, some are more natural than others, but I can safely say that every single person on our team, I would drop them in an IMR, both on the English and the Spanish language side, without hesitation.
Obviously, the US is a very large country in terms of covering. And I always feel that weather is something that's very local to you. You know, you kind of look out the window and the weather is very personal to you. So I'm interested in that kind of decision-making process. I mean, you know, as we're speaking now, there has been relatively recently, extreme weather events in California, for example, with lots of rain and flooding. We talked before about things like wildfires as well. So you can have events, I guess, which are national, but you also have events which are very, very local. So what's the kind of decision-making process about what to cover? Because I guess that could be quite challenging.
It's a great question. Weather, like politics, is local, right? Just as you said. Look, yes, there are the obvious big hurricanes. There are the tragic tornado outbreaks. There are the nor'easters, which affect millions of people directly in the path of those storms. They also, those big events, have the capacity to interest a lot of people who are just fascinated in the event but aren't affected by it, right? I mean, when we do hurricanes, and most recently it was Ian, 1 in 4 American households tuned in to watch us, right? That's far more than the people who were hit by the hurricane, but really speaks to the fact that it was a national event serving national interest. When it comes to the events that aren't a massive hurricane or tornado outbreak or nor'easter, we have to look at, okay, what's the cumulative effect of this event? What is this event going to have impacts for the next few days, weeks, months, years? And you know, to that point, these atmospheric rivers that we had seen over the course of January in on the West Coast, the first round of storms on the face of it looked like a bunch of much needed rain in dry states that, you know, a lot of those territories had been suffering drought. Well, that's fine for the first round and maybe the second round, but by round 5, when people are losing their lives due to fallen trees or losing homes due to mudslides, you have something else going on. It starts to ask questions about insurance. It starts to ask questions about how do local, state, and federal governments build back? Do they? What's the responsibility of the taxpayer? And when those stories start to add up, no, it isn't a hurricane. And yes, it's just essentially a big rain event. But we find so many avenues, again, going back to the weather storytelling, that affects so many people. And while it may be happening in California today, if you tease out the climate change angle, well, is it happening in Ellicott City on the East Coast tomorrow? And they too suffer a lot of major rain and flooding events. So we look at the canary in the coal mine when it comes to events to see, what is this event today, even though it might be happening in a small or smaller population, say about events coming down the pipe?
I guess that also makes it different in terms of how you construct your day. I mean, a lot of traditional news programs, you've got an A block, they've got a B block, they've maybe got a bit of sport, then a bit of weather, and then we're out again. I guess you're looking at things over a much longer scale.
That's right. And we also like to break stories up thematically, right? You know, again, getting back to the weather news and not just the forecasting, an app or a computer is probably going to do a better job going to every zip code in the country and giving you your weather. As a national organization, not only are we not built to do that, but there's no need for that. From us. So what we really look at is, what are the big, most important themes of the day in weather and climate, and how many people do they impact? And then teasing out each of those themes across the hour. So that, you know, your biggest story, whether it's an incoming winter storm, or perhaps it's the cleanup of a storm that just happened, or maybe it's the latest climate change report from COP27. What is that big theme that affects more communities? And then, you know, go to the second theme, it may be related or unrelated, and then the third. But we can show a lot of pictures and do a lot of forecasting within those themes, because they're broad enough to touch more people than just giving the forecast of one city.
You mentioned right back at the start that the Weather Channel is one aspect of the Weather Group. There's other channels, there's other services that you provide. How do they work together? Because I'm guessing, like lots of people, you've got finite resources. You have to decide, you know, where you're going to get most bang for your buck. So are they working collaboratively together? Are they separate? How are they kind of organized to work together?
So I'm glad you asked. One of the most exciting things we've developed over the last 4 years was a platform agnostic content team. And what I mean by that is, unlike a lot of newsrooms that have their digital team and then their linear team, and then they have a special events team, we have teams that do all of them. So you might be in the field for a tornado for linear one day, and then writing a package for our pattern fast channel on climate change the next day. And then perhaps working on another package a week later for linear, but that's also gonna be used for our Weather Channel in Espanol network, because it pertains to a Fort Myers family of Hispanic descent that was hit by Hurricane Ian. We really do a good job creating these multi-sport athletes at the Weather Group. And not only does it, you know, make it really efficient in terms of the resources on the staffing side, but it really gives the staff more things to learn and be skilled in. One of the top things we heard during the pandemic was, we want to learn more skills. We need more opportunity to grow. And it wasn't just more dollars and promotions. It was, I've been doing TV for 20 years. How do I write for digital? How do I become really proficient in social media to be able to, you know, harness the most number of Instagram viewers to be able to come engage with our content? And, you know, we said, there is literally no reason why these extremely smart, talented people can't learn multiple skills. And so we did that, and we offered training and coaching, and we bring people in now that the pandemic's over. We bring in experts to do lunch and learns and seminars, and it has paid dividends, because not only do we have more people skilled in more things, but we have a much more engaged staff, because now they're pitching ideas in on platforms that, you know, may not have traditionally been theirs, but they have a sense of ownership that, well, if I pitch it, I can do it. And, you know, I'm really interested in topic X. That has been a great, just a great piece of value for us.
I think that's really interesting, because I often feel that, you know, no one has a monopoly on good ideas.
Right.
And one aspect that we've talked a little bit in other podcast episodes is about, you know, kind of diversifying that knowledge base within newsrooms and having a more diverse kind of community where, you know, you bring in ideas from. So do you think the way that things have developed, where, you know, people have been willing to take on these other kind of responsibilities, is actually ultimately making a better product?
I for sure do, because the most common denominator in what we're talking about is good storytelling. And if I have a 23-year-old right out of school who is a digital native, right, and knows how to tell stories there, my 20-year veteran can easily teach them how to tell stories for TV, and vice versa. I've got these veterans who have been through, you know, the Iraq war in terms of coverage, and are like, I really want to learn how to do these TikToks, and not in a funny way, but they want to be able to reach the teenagers who, for example, really care about climate change, but just are cord cutters, right? So that kind of sharing of skills and information, the core is that they're all good storytellers. The challenge, the learning, the education is, how do I tell it in 140 characters? How do I tell the story in 3 minutes? How do I do it in 22 minutes for a 30 minute doc? And that's the training. And that's what really makes it exciting, because if you know how to tell a story, you're just going to apply different guidelines and guardrails to tell it differently depending on the platform.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really kind of interesting aspect. I think it's something that's maybe kind of underestimated. I wanted to pick up on something you said right back at the very start, Nora, which is, and you've talked about it a few times, is the mission of the station is about saving lives. The mission of the group is about saving lives. That is very different from the mission of other aspects of journalism. And I'm wondering how that kind of responsibility bears on the staff, because it's a big responsibility to have.
I will tell you that when I first interviewed to be at the Weather Channel, it was the senior vice president of live programming, which is now a position that Angie Massey, very talented, has. That president at the time, David Clark, took me out to breakfast and said, you know, our meteorologists come to work every day to protect and save lives. I laughed. I thought he was being ironic. I thought he was being sort of tongue in cheek, having come from a more jaded broadcast journalism world. And he wasn't. And I didn't appreciate it. And more importantly, I didn't understand it at the time. And then I think it was maybe 8 or 9 weeks after I had been at the Weather Channel, and we had a pretty serious tornado outbreak. And we started getting the letters. Literal handwritten letters in addition to emails saying, I was in my house, I had the Weather Channel on, you showed me that my house was 15 minutes away from a tornado on the ground and we left. Unfortunately, the house has been destroyed, but we're alive. That was the first time where I thought, holy cow, we really do protect and save lives in a very literal and meaningful way. And since then, you know, we've just seen more and more evidence. So yes, it's certainly a heavy responsibility to bear for the staff, but who else gets to say that? That, you know, most people go to work every day, and if the worst thing that happens is the copier broke, or, you know, they got the line on a sports game wrong. And I'm not minimizing those jobs, but the stakes aren't high. Even in journalism jobs I've had in the past, you know, telling stories, they were important, but nobody's lives were on the line. None of my viewers' lives were on the line, depending on the outcome of that story. Lives are on the line if we get it wrong and if we're not there. And it's a huge responsibility, but it's more importantly, it's a huge honor that after 40 years, the Weather Channel continues to be the expert of record to be able to give that life-saving information. So I think to answer your question, if I thought about it too long, yes, I would probably be in the fetal position under a desk. But what it really does is energize all of us who've been doing this for a while to say, what I do matters. And today might be the day when I come to work, even though I'm tired and my kid's sick and my dog threw up on the, you know, stairs and, you know, my mom's calling me like crazy, bothering me about a casserole. But today might be the day I save someone's life. Puts it in perspective.
You mentioned there about the Weather Channel being around for 40 years, massive change through that period. What does the future hold? You know, where do you think the Weather Group is going?
We were talking a few minutes ago about this idea that apps and robots have the ability to hyper-personalize forecasts, right? In a way that national networks just don't do that currently. The caveat I would put on that is we are exploring technology and we are exploring tools to be able to bring a level of IMR and AR that we do on national TV into a personalized, customizable format for viewers. I see a world in which we're able to bring all of the 3D storytelling tools and the visceral information sharing that we already have and make it personalized, customized, and even more accurate than it already is. I think for us, that's the future of not only forecasting, but weather news.
So Nora, we're going to wrap things up now. I think weather is one of these things that it impacts everybody. Everybody's interested in it. I'm in the UK. The Brits are obsessed with weather. So it's great to talk to you and find out a bit more in depth of how the group and the channels work. And there is a final question that I ask everyone on the podcast. So I'm going to ask you, what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
Yes, it's a good one. You know, I'll give you my answer. And coming from someone like me in my line of work, it probably sounds predictable. But what keeps me up at night is not climate change as a topic. You know, it's not necessarily only the threat of a warming environment. It's what I see as a perceived apathy in not most of America, but the percentage of our country and frankly, our world in the people who make decisions that could impact our lives. Meaning, I think that millennials, Gen Z, even a good portion of Gen X understands that we have to act and we have to act now. My concern is the fact that climate change remains a politicized topic, especially in the US, and is weaponized to pass through or halt certain legislation, worries me that it will continue to be a topic that, keeps us at a standstill in this limbo because there aren't enough brave people at the top of our sort of institutions to be able to make hard decisions. So what I would say to that though too is what gives me hope is the change in people's attitudes in our country towards climate change, that they understand it's real, it's happening now, it's human caused, human influenced. And my hope is that permeates the upper echelons of the decision makers, not just in the US, but around the world.
Thanks a lot to Nora for taking the time to talk to us and giving us her insights into the world of weather news. Now, Nora raised the issue of climate change there, and this is, of course, a hot topic within the media industry itself, as many broadcasters and producers look to minimise the impact of their activities on the environment. So, if you want to find out more on that, check out the show notes for links to a previous episode of the podcast where we focus on just that issue and how it's being addressed. You can also find there a link to a white paper looking at how cloud solutions are being used. As always, please subscribe to get notified when the next episode of the podcast is out and share with friends and colleagues to help grow the Making the Media family. You can get in touch on social as well as all the Avid channels. My username on both Twitter and Instagram is CraigAW1969 or email us at makingthemedia@avid.com. That's all for this episode. Thanks to Matt Diggs for his producing duties. Thanks, of course, to Nora. And thanks, as always, to you for listening. My name is Craig Wilson. Join us next time for more of the people making the media.